I often say that addiction is the result of not knowing how to find safety inside of yourself. So you find it in something else, and understandably, you get hooked on it because you're desperate for safety. That's all you're guilty of. Any of you looking to learn more about supporting addiction recovery through a trauma-informed and somatic lens and a nutritional lens, please join me for my addiction circle. This is a bi-monthly, entirely free virtual circle that I invite anyone here to come and join if they want more information. Addiction tends to be so steeped in shame, and I find that doing this work in a community of people helps to destigmatize that shame so you can see how not alone you are in the experience. So whether you are personally withdrawing, preventing, experiencing relapse, or you work with people who are actively addicted or in recovery, all are welcome.
The next Addiction Circle will be held on Tuesday, May 7th at 5 p.m. EDT. This meeting is not recorded for the sake of anonymity. No registration is necessary. Just join through the link below.
You have a release of dopamine when you eat a large amount of sugar, as well as serotonin. And you just, it's just like, I feel more calm. And when people are stressed, that's what they turn to. They're not turning to a bowl of noodles. They're going to go for whatever, the sweet roll, the piece of candy, whatever it is, sweet. And that's because they're getting a large hormonal response, but it leaves you lower than it found you. So if you were at a certain level, then that's going to raise you up and you feel better. But then you're rapidly, when I say rapidly, this is oftentimes in less than 30 minutes, then you fall back below where you were before, and you're even lower than where you were when you ate sweet.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast, where we explore life through the lens of somatics. I'm Luis Mojica, a somatic educator who teaches people how to find safety in themselves. Your turn to learn begins now.
I am back with the illustrious Karen Hurd, and very excited to dive into this with you. I thought my team and I were talking about what to have you on about, because you're one of our favorite guests. And the thing we thought would be really great was a seasonal session or seasonal episode that talks about kind of the three offenders of the nervous system, and the adrenals and the liver and what hormones, whatever else you want to bring in, that we tend to navigate the most October, November, December. That those are chemical fragrances, refined carbohydrates, and sugars. So let's start there, and you tell me where you want to go.
Okay. Well, fragrances, I mean, that's very much a part of the season, because everybody has to have their little simmering pot of whatever on the stove. So when you walk in, it smells like Christmas or smells like whatever you're trying to create. But unfortunately, fragrances, they're pheromones. The pheromone is a tiny little molecule that will stimulate receptor sites on the olfactory receptor cells that are in our nasal passages, and then they also go up into part of our brain. And so these receptor sites recognize the smell, so we can say, oh, that smells like whatever it is. But it also triggers a production of hormones. That's why everybody knows this. So when I smell this fragrance, I feel better. I feel more calm, or I feel like I'm so angry. It just makes me mad, this fragrance, you know? And so, well, what are those? Are those recognition of the fragrance? Is that, no, these are hormones that are being released. And so those hormones then affect how we feel, how we behave, how we think at the moment. And so they're really, hormones are incredibly important. And so when we are purposely triggering their production, then we need to be prepared for some type of, mostly it's a backlash, a negative backlash. It's not just this positive, you know, I feel great feeling. So fragrances, as far as the carbohydrates,
Wait, so let's stop there a minute. Tell us about the backlash. You know what? Because I think of when someone has something, let's say like lavender oil, because, you know, we're not, I'll often talk about chemical fragrances, but I haven't talked about essential oils with you. And that's one of the biggest questions I get from people that heard our last episode about fragrance. Like, well, what about essential oils? Essential oils are also plant hormones. So I'm curious, what, you know, I'm assuming they're less harmful than a chemical fragrance because they're natural still. But you tell me, what have your studies shown you?
I don't think they're less harmful. I think they're just every bit as harmful because they are eliciting the same responses. And we say, but they're natural. So anything natural automatically we equate to good. Mm. Well, then I guess we should equate poison ivy with good because poison ivy is natural. So is poison oak and mosquitoes. You know, they are, you know, what good are they, but they're natural. I mean, just because something is natural.
So I shouldn't go rubbing poison. I shouldn't rub poison ivy all over my face and enjoy its natural benefits.
I do not recommend it, Louise, otherwise you could really be in a lot of pain and trouble, but we have to be very careful about that and not equate the word natural with automatically good. No, they are eliciting the same response, but, and people always come back and they'll say, well, you know, what about, you know, these are natural. Like if you go out in nature, you would smell these things. We do, but people don't realize that the essential oils are highly, highly concentrated. Mm-hmm. They are not just taking, like if you took a rose and you brought it into your home, then it's going to elicit a smell. Mm-hmm. But that smell is not very strong. And in fact, usually you have to put your nose in the rose to be able to smell it. I don't even, this is just an aside, but it does have everything to do with it. When you get roses from a florist, you know, you want to give a dozen roses to your sweetheart or whatever. Do you know they actually spray the roses with a rose perfume so that they smell more like roses? Because the rose itself is not putting off a strong enough scent. And then we have to understand where these are mostly happening. It's always outside in nature. So if I walk by a lilac bush, lilacs have a very wonderful smell to them, but I don't sit there and bury my nose in a lilac bush and just inhale it and continue. No, I'm walking by the lilac bush on my way to wherever I'm going. And so it is there. And maybe when you have your bedroom window open at night, there might be a little breeze that will waft a little bit of the lilac smell into your room, but it's gone in moments. Mm-hmm. When we wear these essential oils, we put them on our neck, we put them wherever we put them, you know, and they are something that is with us now 24/7 and in a very concentrated form. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem is. If it was just out in nature in its natural form, then it's not a problem. But
so that's really nice to hear because they're derived. They're naturally derived, yet they're concentrated in the laboratory. So they're as natural as sugar, right? It's like sugar is derived from a plant, but it's distilled and concentrated. It's the same analogy.
It's exactly the same. So
the response is the same. You're saying that, the difference with a chemical fragrance is it lasts longer, right? Because it's a plastic and it has all those different compounds we talked about last time, like the molecules are so tiny. So it lasts longer, where an essential oil, it really doesn't. I mean, if I put one on my skin after a couple hours, I can barely smell it anymore. Whereas the synthetic one is like right there, like I just applied it. Mm-hmm. However, when it's first, I don't use essential oils anymore either, but when I first would apply an essential oil and it's really fragrant and it's really big, let's say it's under my neck or it's in my shampoo, so it's all over my hair, near my eyes and my nose, is that stress response we talked about still occurring? Is the same stress response as if it was a chemical fragrance? Is that correct?
It is the same stress response as the chemical fragrance. You're still responding. Yeah.
That's what matters to me because I get so curious about, because the origin of things, that could be semantics, but what does the body actually do in response to it? And I like the idea of I'm walking past a lilac bush, a lilac tree, which we have a bunch out there, and the wind blows and it's like this wonderful moment, but it's a moment. I'm not frozen in time with this lilac perfume in my face.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then if you were frozen in time with the lilac perfume in your face, you would have a negative response to it.
Yeah, like hives, sneeze, watery eyes, that kind of thing.
And feeling yourself on edge. Why are you becoming angry so easily? Why are you no more? Your patience is out the window. You don't have it anymore. What has happened to you? You are having these hormonal responses, and it's just Stop.
I want to apologize to everybody listening to this who's rushing to take back their Christmas gifts that are filled with essential oils. No, this is great. I wanted to kind of, I wanted to have like a fun downer episode where we talk about these kind of top three things because they're so prevalent. You know, when I go to the store and it's November and December during the holiday seasons, everywhere I go, I'm smelling chemical fragrance. Everywhere I go, I'm seeing cookies. I'm seeing tons of refined carbohydrates, baked goods. So similar. I like how this is all the same. What do I want to call it? I want to call it mechanism. That doesn't feel like the right word, but it's the same expression where there's a natural element, a whole, something in its wholeness, its whole intelligent form, like the flower outside. Mm-hmm. And then humans take it, concentrate and make it really potent, and then the substance that's created is really potent now has the negative effect on the body. So the same thing as, let's go into refined carbohydrates, let's talk about like oats or wheat or rice or grain. Like there's the whole ground, the whole thing put into, whether it's made into a bread or whether it's made into a gruel or some kind of porridge. But then we have the ultra-refined carbohydrate, where you've removed all nutrition and what's left is essentially sugar. Tell us about what those products are and what they do to your body.
Okay. Well, those are concentrated, concentrated sources of carbohydrates. And so we have, as you mentioned, the whole grains. So that would be a complex carbohydrate. But when you strip away the fiber, which slows the absorption of the carbohydrate, then what happens is these sugars, because that's what they are, all carbohydrates convert into blood glucose or sugar. And so then they can enter the bloodstream more rapidly, as when they are hindered because they have the rest of the plant with them, which is all the fiber, then their structure can, they're just slowed. They still enter, but they're slowed. And that's what we want. We want just a very slight rise in blood glucose, and then it drops slightly, no spikes. Mm-hmm. And what we have done is, you know, you could have a piece of white bread, but if you had your meal and you have your vegetables, which are fiber, and you have your mm-hmm. beans, which are more fiber, and you have your protein, all of that slows that one little piece of white bread down. So it's, you're never going to notice it. It's not going to be a bother to you. But Luis, our meals are not like that. Our meals, they're all they are noodles. And you think of a classic spaghetti meal, okay? You have the noodles, you have some spaghetti sauce, but you have the noodles. And then oftentimes it's in a marinara sauce, so you don't have any meat. So it's just tomato sauce with noodles. Then you have to have your breadstick or your French bread, some type of bread. And then what is the vegetable of choice? It's not a salad. It's corn. Corn, people, I'm still, you know, trying to get this into people's heads. People think corn is a vegetable. Mm-hmm. Corn is a grain.
It's a grain. Yep.
It's a grain. It's just like wheat or, you know, and so then you have your corn. And so what you have is a meal that is all very concentrated carbohydrate. And so then you'll have this rise in blood glucose because you didn't have any protein to slow it down. You didn't have hardly any fiber to slow it down, you know? And so it's mm-hmm. just all, we're back to all carbs. And then
it's interesting because I'm thinking of, especially when I was a nutritionist, I'm sure you get this too, when I'd be looking at someone's daily kind of intake of food and what it looked like, it's usually some kind of baked good with coffee in the morning. And then lunchtime, some kind of sandwich and chips. And then dinner, some kind of pasta, right? Or bread meal or pizza, you know, something. And it's essentially the base of their diet is refined carbohydrate, whether it's a crust. I think what would be helpful for people to hear as we're talking about this is when we're saying refined carbohydrate, I want everyone to think of flour. Let's all just imagine that the grain has been milled into a powder. And there's so many things we make from the flour that seem to have form, right? Kind of like tricks you. Like you see a cracker, you see a cookie, you see a muffin, you see pizza crust, bread. It looks like this like formed thing. But the moment you chew that, your body takes it right down. And you know, the amylase and such in the saliva, it takes it right down to the glucose you're talking about. So these formed, seemingly hearty things, they're just hardened sugar in a way. And then we're eating it and then it's turning into glucose even faster because it's not whole and it's not bound to, like you're saying, these other fibrous things. I think it's fascinating to bring in how fiber slows the absorption or the release of sugar. Can you tell us a little bit about the difference of, let's say, a piece of white bread and actually like a bowl of steel-cut oats? Like, what's the difference of how the body responds to that?
Well, when you look at fiber, it's classified technically by the feds in the United States Department of Agriculture, the FDA. They have defined fiber as a carbohydrate, but fiber give doesn't, and every carbohydrate gives off 4 calories per gram. That's the standard. But fiber, although it is put as a subcategory to a carbohydrate, it doesn't carry any calories at all. There
It's
is
not nutritive. There's no nutrition in fiber.
There's nothing, and 100% is going to be excreted. None of it is absorbed in the bloodstream, and there's no carbohydrate, true carbohydrate, that's going to be converted into blood glucose and enter your bloodstream. It's just it's a I don't want to call it wood chips because it's not. I mean, because that's that gets don't eat wood chips.
Roughage. It's roughage.
Roughage. We can call it roughage, but a lot of people don't understand that is a very complex saccharide, the fiber. It's a very branched. And when you get into your simpler sugars, when so you're talking just your white flours, then there it's not a mini branched molecule. It's very easy to break down. But if you can mix it with those mini branched molecules, then you got to sort it all out. You got to get rid of the fiber so that you can get to the rest of this molecule and break it down, and then you absorb it.
So two things with that. I'm curious, what is your position on grains? Because when I studied a lot of my studies included macrobiotics, which are very grain heavy. And I find grains, when they're prepared properly and combined properly, to be very healing. Grains and carbohydrates get this huge negative rap, but it's because we're talking about the refined version of these things. The further they are from their whole natural state, the less nutritive they are, the higher they are in sugar, and less fiber they have. But in their natural state, what is your personal experience with the health benefits of grains?
The grains, we need them. We have to have carbohydrates. We don't want to just be living on proteins alone, or fats alone. We have to have carbohydrates because they are a very important fuel. They are essential to our health. But when we have a large glut of these refined carbohydrates, that's where the problem, and that's all that the meal is. Like I said, you can have some, the piece of white, bread or whatever you're having, but you have it with this other whole meal that's got all the rest of these things in it, so that the bran that we took out and the fiber that we took out when we made the white flour, well, we've actually put it back in by all the vegetables we just ate with it and the beans, which carry both insoluble and mainly soluble fiber. You have proteins, which are very difficult to digest. You have some fats in there, and so then we have a whole mix, so it's not just this one big dump load of starch.
That's great to hear, because for people that love their slice of bread or garlic toast or something, it's nice that they can enjoy that if the meal's balanced without worrying about a spike, right? So
Exactly.
there's some good news, my listeners. There are some good news on this episode today. So then let's go to the actual refined carbohydrates, the simple sugars. Tell us about those and how the body responds. Probably the worst thing we can ingest, right?
They're the worst thing that you could do. I mean, I don't have, there's not a place. There is not a place for them. And that's my personal opinion.
I
And
get
I
it.
mean, and that is what most people are drawn to. And it's because this large influx of blood glucose very rapidly sets off a whole chain of hormonal reactions that will initially give you a sense of a high or just a sense of well-being for just moments. And then you will crash, and then you have to have more sugar to get that feeling back. You have a release of dopamine when you eat a large amount of sugar, as well as serotonin, and it's just like I feel more calm. And when people are stressed, that's what they turn to. They're not turning to a bowl of noodles. They're going to go for whatever, the sweet roll, the piece of candy, whatever it is, sweet. And that's because they're getting a large hormonal response, but it leaves you lower than it found you. So if you were at a certain level, then that's going to raise you up and you feel better. But then you're rapidly, when I say rapidly, this is oftentimes in less than 30 minutes, then you fall back below where you were before, and you're even lower than where you were when you ate sweet. And so this continual spike and drop, because that's what happens when you each simple or simple sugars, so they're sweets, then you will have this immediate rise in blood glucose, and your blood glucose goes up so rapidly. I'm talking so fast that there's a signal that your brain is getting that if your blood sugar continues to rise at this rate of increase, you will go into what is called a diabetic coma and you will die.
And
And
that's when the THREB response turns on. It's when the adrenals go to work, right? The nervous system gets activated, all these things.
everything gets activated because we're going to have to bring that blood glucose down because you
Right.
are dying. And
So
so
it's like a
then
crisis response the body goes into.
it is exactly what it is. It's a crisis. It's a fight and flight stress response. So we have to bring the blood sugar down. And so there's an overwhelming hormonal release, and the specific hormone that's going to be released is insulin, which will immediately drop that blood sugar. How fast? In a nice little gentle curve coming down? No, this is an emergency. And so we will produce enough insulin to bring this down as fast as it went up. And it will. And that brings it down so fast. Now we're getting the opposite signals. Like our blood sugars are going so low that
That's the
if
hypoglycemia.
now we're going into hypoglycemia, and now they're going to go so low that you're going to go into another fatal state called insulin shock. You have too much insulin. All the sugar is being removed out of your bloodstream. It's being tucked away into, as in a triacylglycerol. It's all converted into a fat, and all of that is, and so it's no longer available as a carbohydrate because all your cells are dependent on burning this sugar, this blood glucose. That's what fuels the mitochondria, the little fuel burning factory inside each cell. It's not burning fat. It is not burning and triglycerides or fats, and that's what the sugar is converted into. So now we don't have enough sugar, and if you don't have enough sugar, then you will die. And that's insulin shock. And so now we have, oh no, now I'm falling too low. So then you get the signal, I need to have something sweet to eat.
That's right.
Oh,
That's
now
right.
you got to have a second donut or whatever it is that you're eating. Then you go back through this spike up, and then you have the subsequent down. And then so you keep returning back to the sugar. It's very horrible. And then if you don't, you say, I refuse. I'm just going to be strong here, and I'm not going to eat the sugar. Well, you're going to have sugar from someplace. So then you have to have an adrenal response to be able to tell your liver to make the, there is a type of glycogen that is made, the liver makes a type of sugar, and then it will make the sugar. But to make the sugar, it has to take a protein molecule and strip off the nitrogen that's part of that molecule because all proteins have a nitrogen component, and take away that nitrogen, and then you're left with carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen, which is what a carbohydrate is made out of. So, haha, we have just made a sugar, but then you just had a release of a nitrogen, which combines immediately with three hydrogen atoms, which is NH3, which is NH3, which is ammonia. Ammonia is a poison in the human bloodstream. It will kill you. So your kidneys go through antics and the stress response crisis. We have to clear this out and slap a OH particle or hydroxyl particle onto this NH3 to turn it into a urea compound. And then that stresses the kidney. You stress the liver, you've stressed your adrenal glands, you've stressed your entire endocrine system. And it's
Oof.
just, and we just go up and down like this. And then we wonder why
For
we have
decades.
for decades. And we
People do
wonder,
this just every day. They do it for decades.
oh, it's so bad, Louise. I mean, we have huge mental health problems. This is all tied to mental health problems because so depressed. I need to eat something sweet because that makes me feel better for the moment. And then we go through this. And then so we just, now we've exhausted the adrenals. We can't make the adrenaline for you to feel like you're normal and level and can participate in life. So you're always down. Or you've got so much adrenaline flowing, you have the anxiety and you're having a panic attack. And it's just like, I can't stay in this room with all these people. I'm losing it. Ah, you know, and it's just, you do things
That
that
was my
you're doing.
whole teen years. Well, not my whole teen years, but later in my teenage years, exactly what I went through. I was pre-diabetic and I had extreme hypoglycemia. And I would crash to the point of having to go to a hospital. I'd pass out in the street because there would be, I would go so low and go so quickly into what you're explaining that shock to be. My cells couldn't even function. I had to black out. I'd wake up attached to a bunch of fluids and IVs and electrolytes and orange juice, you know, all these things. And I think what fascinates me about this is how the same trauma response, like we think of trauma as this huge catastrophic event that happens outside of our bodies. Yet eating this way is an inner trauma. It's a trauma that happens inside the body every hour when your system is going up and down like that. Even like when you're seeing the ammonia, I'm thinking, well, first, the body is having a crisis trauma response because it's saying glucose is rising, we're going to die. So then it like forces the pancreas to make all this insulin. Then, like you said, it drops so quick, there's no blood glucose left. And the body's saying, I'm going to die now because there's no glucose to fuel my cells. Then the liver has to do that whole process of making it out of thin air, which has the metabolic waste of ammonia. And then the kidneys are like, I can't handle all this ammonia. I'm going to die now. And it's like each system is having this panic attack and throwing it to the next system. That's all happening in our bodies. What, just in the morning after a donut with coffee? I mean, it's quite
Exactly.
profound, isn't it?
It's very profound. And if we all understood that and would just take that to heart, we would never again touch a sweet. They are killers. They are killers. You know, we talked about the refined carbohydrates, and they are nothing compared to the sweets.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting as well because when you said if we all understood this, we also wouldn't say to ourselves, why is there a mental health epidemic in this country? You know, we just clearly see the government funded foods that are largely filling up the schools, including the tasty cakes and such, like things you can find in a cafeteria at a school. I mean, these kids are eating these things from first grade to 12th, and everyone's wondering why there's the rampant ADHD and nervous tics and Tourette's and depression, all these things. It's incredible because your serotonin, your dopamine, all these hormones are affected by this imbalance. So you can't even, I've always told people who've come to me because of behavioral issues for their children, whether their children are 3 or 23, I always say to them, you can't actually know who your child is until you change their diet. Like, once you change this, give them a good year or so on something that's really stabilizing and nourishing, then you can assess the behavior. But their behavior is a healthy response to this inner, traumatic state they're having from all the sugar and such. Is that, tell me a little bit about your clinical experience with children, and adults around depression. How does it change when you remove the sugar?
It is like day and night. I mean, I hear this from my clients all the time that they have changed their child's diet and they didn't. It's just like the words are, he's a different child.
Yep,
He's a
that's what I see
different
too.
child. He is. And it's because it's what you said. You're now meeting the real child underneath all that because these are physiological responses. And we get into, well, he's just a bad boy. He's misbehaving. He's acting out. He's having a meltdown. He's whatever. I mean, we see it all the time.
Yep.
But it's because of what they ate. If you would just give them a good food, then they can then process. Sure, they're going to have hard times. We all have hard times. There's other external stimuli coming at us, but they would at least be able to handle it. But right now, it's not just the children, but they grow into teens and they grow into adults. And we
That's
have
right.
them. I see it constantly. I see it all the time. And adults, if they will eat right, they will get better too. And they will see the difference. They have to go through withdrawal because there is a withdrawal period. Nobody likes it where you're craving the sweets, you're craving the caffeine, you're all that. But once you're through that withdrawal, it's like, why did I ever do that to myself?
Right. Well, you just used the W word that I wanted to bring in because we're talking about these children. And what you're seeing these children doing, they're throwing themselves in the ground and screaming and slamming a door. It's the same thing a 40-year-old does at a rehab center, right? When they're withdrawing from an addictive substance they've been taking for decades because the system is so out of balance. And the way you just illustrated it, it's not like over a couple years you get out of balance. We're talking in minutes you get out of balance from simple sugars. So you're taking the sugar in, within minutes your biology gets out of balance. So you're talking about when a child's eating something sweet, within 30 minutes, an hour and a half ago, a relatively short amount of time, you're witnessing withdrawal symptoms because of their inner biochemical change. And I think with adults, the same is true. I see adults get grumpy within an hour of eating, even a whole bag of potato chips. But the body is so big compared to a child's, where I've noticed there's a little more capacity for that shift. Whereas a little kid's body, I mean, it's within minutes, they just get thrown off their center so quickly. So I think that the withdrawal word is an important one to bring in because it is physiological, it is biochemical, it is hormonal. And when we're seeing a quote bad child, what you're seeing is a child's body detoxing and trying to find balance from this instability of the sugar addiction or the sugar habit. And I also wanted to say, I know you're very pure when it comes to no sugar, like not even a drop. What I've heard and what I've seen in the work that I've done is Anything over a teaspoon will send you into the emergency state, right? Because it just takes over 8 grams, because your whole blood has 8 grams, like your entire body has 8 grams of sugar, which is profound. 8 grams is a teaspoon or less sometimes. That's not that much sugar. Can you just expound on that a little bit for people listening?
Yeah, it is. It is. I just can't emphasize it enough that just a small amount, because, and oh, I'll just tell you this because I hear it all the time. Well, you know, I've got this sweet rule and it's got, you know, so many grams of sugar. And so if I cut it in half, then I will be eating less sugar. But it's what people don't understand. It's the density. Density is mass over volume. And so it's how much sugar is in the smallest part, you know? And so even just the one butterscotch candy, it's only one butterscotch candy. It's going to set into play this whole up and down motion. And you're going to have a stress response. And as we continue to do that through the years, boy, our health just wears down, and then you see the result with all of our disease states, which aren't, you know, we don't deal with, you know, diseases, you know, that wipe out, you know, the old diseases like plague and stuff like that. Now, COVID-19, let's set that one on the back burner because we won't talk about that. But we don't see that. What we see are these chronic disease states. We don't see infectious disease, is what I'm saying. Yep. Infectious disease, we don't see killing mass amounts of population. In like this, we're going to take United States and the first world nations, that type of thing. But what we see is this chronic disease state. We have arthritis, we have diabetes, we have cancer, we have heart disease, we have strokes. It's all these chronic conditions. Those are the result of our diet.
That's right. And it's so helpful, because when people don't, I remember when I didn't know that, and I was part of that demographic. I had so many illnesses. There's this kind of unconscious or subconscious cultural idea that that's just what bodies do, right? Bodies just have high cholesterol, and they just have high blood pressure, and they just have strokes, and they just have cancer. And you don't realize it's actually a relational experience between the body and the environment. In this case, we're talking about food. Stress is a whole other story, but we're just talking about the food we've been into our bodies. And I find it fascinating that this, during this holiday season, when it's the darkest part of the year, which already changes your hormones, we take in excessive amounts of fragrances, excessive amounts of carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates, and excessive amounts of simple sugars. And this also happens to be the highest percentage of the year where suicide is committed, where depression skyrockets, loneliness, isolation. I just get curious about that cultural collective relationship to the foods, the holidays that kind of like pimp these foods out to people, and then what's happening in these bodies. Do you notice that correlation as well?
I see it all the time. And we do, we have to look at it as a multifaceted picture, because we hear all the time, you know, it's because people are alone on the holidays and they don't have their family. This is why they committed suicide. You know, that's one factor that could be coming in, but you have all the other things that they just ate the whole fruitcake or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's just, that's playing into this too. And then you have all the scented whatever. All of these things are playing into it. So some things are within our control. And those things, the things that are within our control, we need to control. We need to take responsibility and use our voluntary choices so that we don't go down those roads. Some things are outside of my control. I can't help the poor woman that has none of her family is there, and she's sitting in her apartment all by herself. You know, I can't fix. Maybe she could. Maybe she could call a friend and go next door or something like that. But the things with the food, we can control those things. And people always say, well, but the holiday is all about food. That's because we have made it about
food. That's right.
It doesn't. I go through every holiday just like everybody else does, but it's not about the food. It's because my children are all coming home. I have 5 children. I'm going to see them all. We're going to be in one place at one time, and I get to catch up with them and hear the news, and I get to see all my little new grandchildren that were born that I haven't seen, you know, in a while. And I get to be around family, or I get some extra time off from my job. It's just like, wow, I have a day off. What am I going to do with it? Book? I'm going to play the piano. Yeah, I got all these choices. You know? And so there's so many things to do. and still eat. You can still enjoy a meal, but why don't, you know, maybe you don't have, you know, turkey every day and you're going to have, you know, bone in turkey instead of, you know, and then you go through the elaborate, you know, making these healthy, you know, foods. But it shouldn't, I never, never focus on food. Mm-hmm. So many times, Luis, I just thought, I will be so glad when I am in heaven because I don't have to eat.
You know, I think it's excellent because I think of, I remember when I really made my shift with food and my whole body was transforming, I was healing, and I just said, I'm not going to go back to that other way I used to eat. And I also, you know, just because I do work so much in the trauma field, there are so many layers to food, right? You know, you've had the people where it is purely emotional. And if the emotional undertones and overcouplings and associations aren't dealt with, you'll keep being kind of propelled to these things for some people. So it really helps to do some kind of therapy or trauma work to get to the root of why these behaviors, compulsions around food exist. So there is that piece. And then I love what you said about the holidays not being about food, because when my wife and I go to her parents' house, we'll bring our little containers, you know, of food, because they have their traditional, let's say, like Thanksgiving meal, and we have our non-traditional meal. And something shifts in my body, you know, in the last decade of doing that, where, just like you said, the holiday doesn't become a day I have to recover from. You know, I feel it becomes this real day of ease and like reflection, and I get a break because the whole world's taking a break. Well, our whole world at least is taking a break. And I feel like, okay, I get time off, everyone's together, I don't have to recover from eating all these things. It's almost like an advantage instead of this thing where it's this big day, I'm super stressed with all the stuff I'm making, I eat so much, I'm exhausted for days, or I'm sick afterwards. And so I think it's interesting to uncouple, which is a word I talk about a lot on here, food from the holidays, which for some people listening, they're gonna think we're crazy. They're like, but that's what the holiday is all about. It's about the food. But we've made it about the food. You know, the heritage, the religious, the cultural, there's so many roots of what the holidays really are. And we often use the holidays as service time. You know, we go out and we give food to the poor that's, you know, sitting on benches who don't have family. That is so much more satisfying to me than eating a giant Thanksgiving meal. So I think it gets curious when you remove the food from it, something else emerges. Like you were saying, like hobbies, or like I'm saying, volunteer work, or just rest, right?
Yep. Yep. That's what it should be about. And then you'll truly be happy instead of...
Yeah, it's like true happiness. It's not simulated happiness from the sugar. I don't know if there's anything else I want to ask. I mean, there's a million things I want to ask you, but about this topic, I'm thinking this might be a good place to start landing. Could you introduce us to what it would be like at Karen Hurd's dinner table on Christmas Day? Like, what would we expect? If you were serving us, not your family, but just you by yourself, what would you be serving?
Well, I would definitely be serving a meat, some type of protein. It would probably be turkey because my family likes turkey. So we would be eating the breast of turkey because that has the least amount of saturated fats and versus the dark. And then we will have most likely mock mashed potatoes, which are beans. They're just beans.
Oh, wait, tell us about this. What is a mock mashed potato? I haven't heard of this
All
before.
It is you can make them out of any bean, but I usually make them out of the northern beans. And then they have a few spices in them, some garlic and some onion. And you blend them up. I mean, mm-hmm. You have to put them in a food processor and you blend them all up. And they're not potatoes. They're just beans. And so there's our beans. And then we have to have whatever vegetables. Usually we have a salad, you know, with whatever, you know, there's all kinds of things that can go into a salad. And then we'll have some green beans or another vegetable. And then we'll have a pumpkin pie, but we usually make it out of butternut squash, which is fine. It's made out of pumpkin, but butternut squash has a whole much more, but there's no sugar in it. There's just no sugar. And then
what do you do with it?
Oh, we make it into a custard. I use almond milk, you know, so, you're making a pie and our pie crust is a bean pie crust. You can get bean flour. And so we have a bean flour crust and then there's no sugar in it. And then you have, so it looks like a pie, but anybody that's coming from, I'll call it the regular world, you know,
yeah.
You take a piece and they say, it's not sweet. It tastes like it's squash. But
it is squash. It is squat. And to you, it's probably the most decadent thing in the world because you haven't had sugar in 30 years.
Oh, this is so nice. It's a, you know, but that took effort because you're, you know, it's a, It's a custard, you know, and
Oh
so
yeah, absolutely.
so that takes time, and because there's eggs in it too. There's eggs and then there's the almond milk, and then you bake it, and yeah, so
That is awesome.
and it's all yummy.
I get, you know, when I was deep in macrobiotics, I remember going to a restaurant and for dessert, I got steamed kabocha squash with tahini dressing. And it tasted like candy, you know, because when you're off of the simple sugar wagon, your taste buds get so much more sophisticated. And the simplest, I mean, an apple sometimes is too sweet. Like it gets so, you can really taste every little sugar coming off of that natural food. That's a great spread. That's awesome. Well, everyone heard it. You can have your pie and eat it too. Karen just taught us how to do it. You don't have to forego the pie. Thank you for your generosity and your fun and just everything you teach us. I appreciate
Yeah, you're welcome.
it. Hope we didn't ruin the holidays for you all.
Yes, you too.
Ooh. That's the end of today's episode. Now let's take a moment to notice where we feel the episode in our bodies. Close your eyes. Take a breath. And let whatever wants to come up, come up. And remember, those sensations hold the wisdom that we're looking for. If you want to go deeper, visit holisticlifenavigation.com. Hey everybody, it is time. It is time to hop on a plane, a train, a boat, a goat, a bike, a car, and find your way upstate New York to a little town outside of Phoenicia. I don't know what the town's called actually, but the place that we're going to be in is called Menla. And it is a gorgeous, epic retreat center in the middle of the forest in the Catskill Mountains with a spa and organic vegetarian food with lots of beans and yoga in the morning and a swimming pool and a swimming hole and trails. And yes, it is an HLN retreat. It is a 5-day retreat from Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. It is the biggest retreat we've ever put on, and the entire team is going to be there. They are all flying from different corners of the country to come together to hold you in the healing magic that is somatics. We will be teaching you how to belong without having to fit in, how to find safety inside of yourself and share that with others, how to receive witnessing, how to feel for your boundaries instead of fawning. We are going to cover so much, and you're going to be doing it in the most ideal setting of being fed, of being loved, of resting, of enjoying the forest and nature, and being with us and 60 other bodies. So please go to the website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on events and you'll find it there. Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. All the info as well can be found directly through the link in this episode details. I am just so thrilled for this and I can't wait to see some of you in person.